tristeza de arrabal, sentado en la vereda. Tristeza de arrabal, el amor que se fue por las calles desiertas. El amor que se va. Las esquinas baldías, la luna sobre el portal.
And good morning, good morning. It is 6 minutes past eight in the morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting here on KBOO, your very own community radio station. I'm Ani.
And I'm Lynn, and I feel like I should be in six-inch heels.
You should be in six-inch heels.
Music?
Absolutely.
And that's actually, we are, and we're dancing around. We're tangoing around the air room as we speak, very early in the morning tango.
It's a beautiful thing here at your community radio station. The carpeting, however, means that you can't actually hear our intricate footwork.
That's right. We don't like to make extra noise.
That's right. It was a band called Otros Aires with a track off of Tricoda, Tristeza de Arrabal. My Spanish is not so good, but it's improving, I swear. And that's possibly a scary thought in and of itself. That's improving hands, really? So, this is our show about perspective checks. And I wanted to start off this morning with that track because, in fact, yes, I have just returned from a couple weeks in Buenos Aires, Argentina, with my beloved Teresa. And if you've been listening to KBOO's Press Watch for the last couple weeks, you already know a little about the trip from Teresa's perspective. It was a piece of medical tourism. I love that phrase, medical tourism.
That's very big now.
It is. And
no one can afford to get surgery in this country.
I was going to say.
I can't tell you the amount of people I know who's gone to Mexico. And I hear that heart surgery in India is a big deal. People are even sending, doctors are sending folks there.
It's a very weird world. And this is actually a part of the conversation as well. You know, the impetus to travel, what actually gets us going to places. I know I would never have thought, oh, yeah, sure. I want a little family vacation this year. I'm going to just spin the globe and pick Buenos Aires because it seems spendy for one thing. And I mean, plane travel, you know, fuel, all this stuff. It's the environmental costs. It's the actual ticket prices. It's all manner of things that one takes into consideration. And, you know, when all's said and done, if somebody needs medical care that you can get in another country that you really can't get here because the cost is too high, well, that's some incentive, right?
Yeah, it's the paradox of these days that we don't want to have the carbon footprint of flight, but that's the only way to get anywhere, and it's really important for Americans right now to get, it always has been to me, get out of the country, find a different perspective on where you live.
That's exactly it. And perspective, man, did I gain some perspective. So we actually have Teresa joining us in case she also would like to comment on perspectives gained. But I have to say, here's sort of the framework for our discussion this morning. Oh, gentle listener. That it's really hard to see what's going on directly around you when we're swimming in it, right? Like, is the goldfish really aware of the water? How often do they actually look at the multicolored pebbles lining the bottom of the goldfish bowl? You know, it all sort of blends. And I would put out there that our world, you know, our individual day-to-day worlds, they've sort of blended into the background, go along to get along. We know what we have to do. We just sort of get through it. And we, you know, are deeply in these patterns. This is true for everyone the world over. But when you suddenly break those patterns, when you suddenly get outside of your own and maybe check out somebody else's, that is really illustrative. It gives us a way to really look at ourselves that might be wholly different.
That nothing else can.
That really nothing else can. And I think that really is a huge part of the importance of travel. Not only do we get to learn new cultures and new ideas, but we actually get to see ourselves in a way that without traveling, we really don't. So that's part of, I think, why it's so important to travel. I know, Lynn, you've done quite a bit of traveling as well.
Yes, in the day.
So it's, I think...
In the 70s and 80s when it was cheaper.
Well, there's that.
And we weren't so worried about carbon footprint then. We should have been, but we weren't.
You know, I noticed that for myself, the biggest thing that really has popped out to me, and it's kind of a sad thing, it's the incredible amount of apathy in this country. That is the thing that I really have gotten from my vacation. The incredible amount of alienation, the incredible amount of apathy.
Well, specifically?
Here's the thing. What I found in Buenos Aires blew me away. For me, it was very much a stick a pin in the globe and let's see where we end up. I had no particular connection to Argentina. I never had the hunger to go tango till dawn. I never had any of that. And in fact, when Teresa said that this is the place where she wanted to go get a particular surgery, facial feminization surgery, because their clinics are coming to some prominence globally in this field, I was like, oh, huh. Well, that'll be curious. Let's see. They do tango, wine, beef, and then there was that Evita play. I mean, this was the be-all and end-all of my knowledge, okay? I'm not proud of that fact. I'm just saying. I went there with a completely clean slate. And what I found was, within the first day of wandering the neighborhoods, which is my favorite way to explore anywhere, I found more rich, anti-capitalist, anarchist, and or socialist-inspired graffiti in, a square mile that I was walking around than I have seen in Portland, San Francisco, Olympia, Washington, and Seattle combined. And I thought, huh, who are these people? What's going on here?
Weren't there elections happening when you were there?
There, in fact, were elections happening while I was there. There was a lot going on while I was there, and I can't imagine that it was just a really happening couple of weeks. I mean, sure, the elections don't happen all the time.
Well, how many? You guys were in demonstrations when you were there.
So, yeah, there's a lot to be said about the amount of activity that just sort of seems to, happen as people are truly engaged. And that was... over the next week or so, what I was really realizing was the palpable difference that here we have a lot of folks going, something's not quite right. This doesn't work for me. Oh, my God. The Congress, the president, they're actually talking about, taking away all benefits for everyone forevermore. Austerity measures. Oh, we got to tighten our belts. We got to pull ourselves up by our sandal straps. Maybe it's now our flip-flops because we can't afford the boots anymore. It's okay. At least I got cable. And I'm going to be watching, my 37,000 channels that don't really have anything on them. But it's kind of comfy. And I got, I think a TV dinner in the freezer somewhere. And so it was so stark to me that when one is engaged in one's culture, engaged in one's life, that is not the prevalent attitude, in fact, that we in this country have become so disaffected. We really feel powerless. And to me, that was a huge difference. Here, there is a feeling of powerlessness, of desperation. And it's a very quiet desperation. It's a meek desperation.
Do you think
there was not that feeling? There was a feeling of, as some of the graffiti said, the power is with the people, and the people are in the streets. That was the feeling there, and it was so markedly different as to get me to really have this persistently nagging question for the last couple weeks of how do we here in this country catch that passion? How do we shake off alienation? How do we shake off that anticipate, you know, that other word that I can't get out of my mouth right now. How do we shake off the feelings of, you know, apathy? We can't, you know, there's,
is it apathy or despair?
Well, see, now I think that's a good question.
Well, Lynn and Ani, thanks for letting me chime in.
There are two
things that made me think of Lynn while I was there. One is that militants, and also the underlying not entirely broken sense of community that allows it to take place. And the other was the shoes. Oh, my God.
I know.
Just like, Lynn would look great in these shoes everywhere. It's just like Lynn's shoe shop every five blocks. But five blocks.
Oh, heck, torture me. Go ahead.
But, well, yeah, I'm. That's really something I wanted to talk about. And I thought about it a lot, the difference between the Argentine attitude and the U.S. Attitude. You know, I love all the people who have held out, and it's been so hard in the United States to be openly and loudly anti-imperialist, to be anti, you know, corporate domination, to be anti-billionaire, this sort of thing. We're under this constant propaganda assault. And when you get out into the streets to exercise your First Amendment duties and rights, then you're literally under assault from, you know, these Darth Vader-clad police. So there are reasons why there's a difference. I mean, when we were at a demonstration in Argentina that was in protest of, it was all about land rights, actually. In Jujuy province, a number of people have been living on sugar plantation land for how long? A decade or so? I mean, a long time.
Very long time, and it's 700 families.
Yeah.
Actually, it's, you know, not just a lot of people, it's 700 families.
And all of a sudden, the sugar plantation owners decided they just wanted the land back. You know, they're going to use it now. And never mind that there's an entire community on there. So the cops are sent in. There was a fight. Four people got killed. It was ugly. But that's the difference right there. I mean, people don't dare assert their rights. Their rights. We don't believe in our own rights to land, which is sad. It's like you live on the planet. You're made of material stuff, right? You have a right to land because you need land to live.
Birds.
You need something to stand on, a place to sleep, a place to grow food, perhaps. And
birds do not pay rent.
Yeah, your right to land is an essential part of your humanity, and a lot of Latin America understands this, and most of the United States does not.
So that was
true from the start. And pardon me for rattling on with this, but. So they protested, and of course they didn't want to get kicked off the land. And when it got so ugly, and they had used this force, and people had gotten killed, people assembled by the thousands and thousands and marched down the streets of Buenos Aires. And I was there because Ani was quite excited, and I wasn't sure. I'll admit I wasn't sure I wanted to go because I was staggering from the surgery. I was literally staggering.
So of course Ani, who goes to be Teresa's companion and make sure that she is adequately taken care of, drags her into the demonstration, staggering or not.
But it was a militant demonstration, as you were describing, and it was wonderful, and the energy of it was terrific and inspiring and something that I haven't experienced around here because we have been so beaten down when it comes to experiencing our own expression.
And Teresa and I are, let's just say, no strangers to the street demonstration. I don't know how many I've been to in my life. I started going when I was 12. I started organizing them when I was 13. And yet, you know, there was that one right before the Iraq War in Portland. It was, you know, people have said upwards of 10,000, and it might well have been. That was small, really, compared to what we saw marching on the federal buildings of Buenos Aires. Now, of course, it is a state capital, or, a federal capital. It's a country's, what do we call that thing? It's a capital city. So this could have been more equivalent of a march on Washington, but it was called in a week. There was a week's preparation time. I want to just sort of throw that out there. And thousands, tens of thousands.
Actually,
of
I have an update on that if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I do.
Let's see. This is dated today from Buenos Aires Herald. And this is another thing. The press actually covered the demonstrations.
This is actually how we figured out where it was.
Well, that has something to do with why they're effective.
Yes, it certainly does. We've got a lot of work to do. And part of the work we have is to demand our democratic rights. And that includes actually having journalism support KBOO. Anyway, it says demonstrations against Jujuy deaths. Jujuy is the name of the province. It's J-U-J-U-Y. caused traffic chaos. Activists of the CTA, Argentine Workers Central, marched down different areas of the city in protest of the serious incidents that took place in the Jujuy province, locality of Libertadores General San Martin, in which four people died during an eviction. Protesters marched in Corrientes Avenue in front of the Ledesma Sugar Refinery headquarters. It was all about Ledesma Sugar, and it was all about, you know, bankers and that sort of thing.
While another, rights and, well, yes, cop brutality.
Yeah, while another group marched to the province office in the city, located in Santa Fe and Carlos Pellegrini streets, just in case you're in Buenos Aires listening to me. I thought you'd have that detail anyway. But the protest caused chaos and traffic in the nearby areas. The Corriente Clasista y Combativa, that's a CCC left-wing group. I just love that name, too. Corriente Clasista y Combativa. And it's like, sure, yeah, it's class war and we're fighting back. Left-wing group announced that it would hold several simultaneous protests in Santa Fe, Chaco, and Buenos Aires provinces. So it's still going on.
The CCC actually, that was the group that the land rights protesters were a part of as well. So the folks that were killed. There's a few things around this. Okay, so when I said, well, this is how we found out what was going on, what I mean to say is we were sitting in a coffee shop because Teresa was staggering and we'd already walked through Plaza de Mayo because we'd seen a little notice that there was going to be a demonstration. But there was no one around. And I'm like, huh, well, that's curious. Well, okay, Teresa, no, let's not go back to the hotel just yet and let you sleep. Look, there's a coffee shop. Let's go. We'll revive you a little bit. We'll get you a little snacky food, and you'll be fine, I'm sure of it. So off we went, dragging my beloved to the coffee shop. And coffee shops apparently have, as a very regular course, large screen televisions with the sound turned down, usually turned to the 24-hour news channel or a sports channel. And this one had news.
Not Fox?
It was not Fox. All right. It was not Fox. It was, however, mainstream corporate news from, you know, and again, I have not yet done any kind of serious in-depth research about who owns the station and what's going on with that.
I did notice a lot of the products they were advertising were Argentine products, and they're proud of that, I've noticed.
Yeah, a lot of stuff that I don't see here, but it's the typical products. It's your, you know, snot-resistant pills. It's your, you know, floor shine waxing. It's your, you
soft
know,
toilet paper.
You butter. Know, all of that.
Lots of butter.
So lots of butter. All of that. Lots of cow products. But that said, you know, what I had noticed about the news channel was it was very typical in the way it was stacked. You know, the sort of hour-long reel that varies a little bit throughout the day. You know, if it bleeds, it leads. There was usually some sort of rather sensationalized crime story right there at the beginning. You know, there was a robbery in the Belgrano neighborhood.
The handsome announcer and the announcer with the helium boobs.
You know, all of that. The very blow-dried talking head sort of people. And then, your sort of politician sort of statements and your, you know, any speeches that might have happened that day. And then, often as not, segments on what was happening in the streets. There are protests, if not in Argentina, then in Chile or in another country close by.
And sometimes they would just leave the camera on the demonstration. They would do the newsreel while that was in the background.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? Lynn, can you imagine?
Well, I'm trying to remember if that used to happen. No, not quite. I'm thinking back even to the 60s,
right,
when things were even more reported. I remember Vietnam sort of being reported that way.
Well,
so
really,
if I could just finish, though.
Oh, sorry.
So there we are sitting in the coffee shop when suddenly there is this coverage of this protest that looks humongous and all manner of lively. And I'm looking at Teresa and I'm like, oh, there's a protest happening somewhere. Oh, look, in the corner it says live coverage. Oh, look, it's flashing on the bottom of the screen that it's two blocks from here.
And then we can hear it.
It was about then that we could start hearing the drums. So, we left the coffee shop and joined. It seemed like the thing to do. Mostly, at first, we watched because we were absolutely stunned with the size and the organization. There were scores of different socialist parties. Many of these organizations had actual political wings that were running presidential and other legislative candidates. There were socialists, there were communists, there were the class war, the CCC folks. There were anarchists. I got to say, when the anarchist contingent passed, and they were about 40, 50, you know, strong, the better part of a block long, actually, I wept. I mean, I was just so completely blown away that there were people organized without masks, hello, without masks, with a large flag. The Student Front for Liberation was the name of this particular group. And every person carrying the red and black flag of anarchy that we all know and love so well.
It was inspiring. And Lynn, I was half a block down from her, and I started crying. And I came up to her, and I'm like, are you crying? She's like, I'm crying. I tried to give him a smile of solidarity, but the blood loss made me look more like a zombie, I think. But go ahead.
I ended up having a very, very tiny conversation with my very, very bad Spanish with the anarchists later on. Mostly, I took their flyer. And they, you know, it was, again, just a very moving experience. And I was left staggering myself that day, wondering what it takes to get this kind of passion.
Well, what you it know takes what to it get took in Argentina to get that.
Yeah. I don't want it to take that. I don't want us to have to go through 35 years of disappearances and tortures in this country in order for us to wake up. Does that really,
well,
is that what it takes?
Did they not say no to the World Bank at some point?
Well, now that also has happened. You know what has occurred to me is we should throw out the phone numbers.
Yeah, we even have a caller on the line.
We wanted to ask what you did on your summer vacation and how you find travel. Checking your perspective, what the importance of mixing up our cultures really is. Cultural exchange, you know, it's important. It allows you to see your own world from a much different perspective. So 503-231-8187 is the number to call if you'd like to join in this conversation.
And if you're in a typey kind of mood, positivelyrevolting@gmail.com is our email address.
Yes, indeed, Lee.
Well, I have some details on recent history, if you like.
All righty.
It is merely from Wikipedia, but it's all together here. Let's see. Starting in, well, they mentioned the hyperinflation, which hit again in the 90s. And then it continues. President Fernando de la Rúa inherited diminished competitiveness in exports. The governing coalition The governing coalition developed rifts, and his returning Cavallo to the economy ministry was interpreted as a crisis moved by speculators. And this is all in the late 90s. A climate of popular discontent ensued, and on December 20th, 2001, Argentina dove into its worst institutional and economic crisis since 1890. There were violent street protests, which clashed with police and resulted in several fatalities. The increasingly chaotic climate amid riots, accompanied by cries that they should all go, finally resulted in the resignation of the president, De La Rúa. Three presidents followed in quick succession over 2 weeks. If you're asking this, like, what does it take? I guess it's like, this is part of what it took. So this is what it took in Argentina. Culminating in the appointment of interim president Duhalde by the Legislative Assembly in 2002, Argentina defaulted on its international debt. You know, and that's, I think that's one thing that is remembered. And the peso's 11-year-old tie to the U.S. dollar is rescinded, causing a major depreciation of the peso and a spike in inflation again. Duhalde, a Peronist with a center-left economic position, had to cope with a financial and socioeconomic crisis with unemployment as high as 25% by mid-2002 and the lowest real wages in 60 years. And, you know, and all that reminds me of kind of what we're looking at right now. It's not as severe, and yet, in some ways, it is.
Not yet.
Certainly, if you're a black teenager, it's more severe, and you can't get a job.
What there were people passing out outside of a job fair. And first of all, people, job fairs will never get you jobs, just so you know. It's people to advertise service work. But there were, it was on Democracy Now! This morning, people in the thousands outside in the heat in Atlanta, folks were passing out waiting to get into this thing. We're so on the brink. There are little protest things. The Verizon strike is great. These people are saying that Verizon is telling them because of the economy they have to cut benefits and wages, and they're saying, no, you're making money. I don't think so.
And hooray for them. You know, hooray for them. Shout out to Verizon workers for exhibiting the militants that we're all going to have to move towards.
Hershey, there's a strike going on at Hershey right now with guest workers. This is like Disney does this too, brings kids over on their from Europe or wherever as a guest worker for a summer vacation and sort of treats them like slaves.
It's such a scam.
I mean, it's a total scam.
It hurts everyone.
Well,
it hurts the guest workers.
Yes.
Because, you know, they're working here without protections, you know, without rights. You know, they're being treated, as you say, as wage slaves, and indentured servants, and of course it hurts us because
and
we
they're
have to
captive.
Compete
their
with this.
Slogan is "No more captive workers at Hershey."
Right on.
And so these are
I
folks.
Won't touch a Hershey.
There is no real chocolate in them anymore. So.
So there.
Don't bother.
Well, the bases seem to be loaded, Lynn.
Then
who should we talk to?
Well, Thomas was on the line first. Should we go with him?
Yes. Good morning, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hey, good morning, folks. I'm really enjoying your discussion, and it's very interesting to hear about your recent experiences in Argentina. It's something I often think about. I have not traveled extensively except for numerous travels in Western Europe and in Scandinavia. And you can read, you know, and I studied sociology and so forth and been, you know, actively interested in economics, and you can read things about the structure of different countries, and you can have some understanding, but to actually be on the street and visit different countries, it hits you at a totally different level.
Yeah.
And the thing, you know, that's amazing is that if you look at the statistics for the number of the percentage of Americans that actually have a passport versus other so-called, let's say, modern, you know, industrial democracies, and the amount of actual travel Americans do, it's pretty frightening. You know, it's really, really a very small. There's just a lack of awareness, and so I think this really, really feeds into the abject lack of class awareness and
yes.
this sort of very, very cynical mindset, even on those that otherwise, you know, would be very progressive. And this almost this bubble that exists. You know,
it's that myth of American exceptionalism.
Absolutely, and you know, when you go to a country like a Denmark or an Austria or a Germany, and you see the sort of incredible public infrastructure that can be built and maintained, you know, when the economy is not primarily oriented towards either, you know, the enrichment of an opulent minority or an international military empire, it's absolutely striking. You know, when you're in Amsterdam and you see in other cities in Holland, and you see bike lanes regularly, arterial bicycle lanes that are bigger than the car lanes everywhere.
Yes.
You know, you see a definition of public space that really feels like it's owned by the public. You won't find a loitering sign in most of those countries. It does. The concept of loitering is even alien. You know, and it's so incredibly impactful. And then the thing is that one starts to think, I know that when I returned, you know, starting 12 years ago when I began traveling over there, when I came home, I had sort of a reverse culture shock coming back to the...
Oh, yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. In the airport, and just the downtrodden feeling of people in the air was palpable. And I...
Everything looks so gray.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first thought I started having is, my God, you know, we don't really live in a modern country by contemporary standards. It's really, really surprising to feel that, but it's actually true.
You know, that's kind of the point I wanted to make joining in on this show, is just like, feel the fascism, people. It's really that bad. I mean, I was coming back thinking, well, so much for that breath of freedom, and now it's back to the United States. God damn it.
Yeah, and just to wrap up, because I know other people are wanting to comment, you know, and as far as the signs of class awareness, I mean, the fact that you have multiple, you know, third and fourth parties or reality in most Western European and Scandinavian countries, the fact that you have that, there's a palpable class awareness, and you even get it talking to kids that are middle-class children or have some degree of class awareness, and it's really striking. And, you know, for example, you were talking about some of the artwork and things in the graffiti. I spotted lots of political graffiti all over Western Europe, and the one that sticks in my mind the most, which I saw all over Heidelberg, Germany, it was a stencil, and it said "Das Krieg ist immer," or "The war is always," and it had an outline of a television set, the dollar bill symbol, and an outline of a bomb. And anyway, so it's just people. I encourage anyone to that's a progressive to just step outside of the box and visit Argentina or visit someplace in Europe and just get that breath of fresh air, because it'll totally expand your sense of what's possible in society. I think it's a great medicine.
Well, thank you, Thomas.
Thanks for
your call.
Thank you so much. There's a stencil that I saw in several places that I actually posted to our page at Positively Revolting on kboo.fm/positively revolting. Right now you can see it on our homepage, kboo.fm. And it says, Nada vale si hay un niño en la calle, which means it is worth nothing if there's a child in the street, or nothing's worth anything if there's a kid sleeping in the street. It's a beautifully done stencil, and I think it kind of hits the nail on the head, as it were. You know, at what cost is capitalism? At what cost is this hyper-globalization and the economic mechanisms that are driving certainly the U.S. and had been driving Argentina, you know, of course.
Oligarchy and greed.
Exactly.
Which was quite pervasive in South America for hundreds of years.
Well, and so how again do we bring the idea, bring the notion that in fact people have inherent value, that you know, you can have all the glitz and you know, the nice boutiques that you might ever want, but when kids are homeless, what's the worth in our country, right? Like, what's going on here? Where are our priorities? To see that kind of class consciousness reflected every block, from stencils, from scrawled graffiti, from, you know, people's lips. It's a consciousness. There's a passion behind it. It is, again, it's about dynamic engagement. It's about knowing what has happened and knowing that that's not acceptable. We won't be going back to it. Now, again, in this country, depending on where you're sitting, it either has or hasn't happened to you yet, right? Mm-hmm. If you're a person of color, then you already know that things are bad, that it's, you know, and it has been for generations, right? And if you are, in fact, poor white or working class white, you know, my family, you know, my dad grew up in the Depression era, a member of 13 kids in the family. You know, so there was actual class consciousness, actually, in my household. There was a whole lot of talk about, you know, helping the hungry, helping those that need help, getting through it together. Mom was from wartime Britain. Dad was from the Depression. That was a part of our consciousness. So many people have become somehow or another very disassociated from that.
In my household, it was class denial.
Mm.
Though we were working class. But here's a little anecdote about what's going on these days. You know, when you put we just put our bottles out on the, and put them in the recycling, and then folks come by and pick them up, and it used to be black people going by them. I've watched, and it's in the last couple of months, it's white folks coming by to pick up the bottles. Hmm. Big, burly, working class kind of looking guys. And some people, I love the people that drive around to look for the bottles. And I feel a little resentful, like they shouldn't have them. But I put them out there. They're out there. I know they're out there for everyone to have. But I'm like, because I'm watching the sort of economic oppression is shifting to everyone.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you know, I think there are things that prevail here that wouldn't wash in Argentina. I mean, one of them is this idea that we're all middle class. I mean, there are people listening to me right now. hello,
and
you.
I like myth.
You've been working. You've been working all your life. Let's say last couple, three decades, you don't have enough saved up to get you by 3 months without a paycheck, and you start
you're working class.
But you're
people,
middle
it's
class,
okay.
Right? No, you're not middle class. Yeah, we are working class,
and that's fine. That's the other thing is that it's not okay to be working class.
Yeah.
That's why in my family. That's why.
Yeah, that meant you're a failure. That meant you didn't climb far enough up the socioeconomic ladder. No, it's glorious to be working class, and the world wouldn't turn without the working class. I mean,
and that's very different in America than other places.
We create all wealth, and that's and you're right about that.
Thank you.
That denial is pretty intense, and then there's the idea that we have a democracy, which, as I was saying, especially after going to Argentina and seeing some people actually exercising their democratic rights, is a ridiculous idea. And one thing that I've repeated a few times on the air already is going to that demonstration, and when it entered the Casa Rosada, which is the pink house, the equivalent of the White House, where Kirchner resides.
I love it. It's really pretty.
Oh yeah, it's nice in the evening, I should say. But when they entered that square, they did not. have to pass a cordon of determined plastic clad, you know, baton wielding police. It was just, as I was saying, you
snipers
know,
snipers on the roof.
No, there was no snipers. There was just the one water truck and the.
But they've been through that already. They have had that happen.
They have had that, and they fought for this, and so they get to the square. And they set off some fireworks to announce that they were at the square. And these aren't just little pop-pop fireworks, but things that make this tremendous boom-boom. And
I
didn't know what the heck was going on. It scared me half to death. I thought, oh, my God, the cops have opened up. And then I realized, oh, no, I'm an American. That's what my problem is. I'm a United States citizen, and I think the cops have opened up. No, this is a demonstration. This is accepted in Argentina in 2011. And these people are setting off the fireworks to announce to the world that they and their thousands have arrived to make their political point.
I think it's fair to say that there is really horrendous police abuse and police brutality in Argentina. Remember, the demonstration was called because cops had killed, four land rights protesters the week before. But and I saw plenty of cops, you know, hanging out on the corners of the streets close to Plaza de Mayo. But you're right. They didn't look like Ninja Turtles. They didn't have their nightsticks out. They weren't like tapping them against their open palms. These are all tactics I've seen the Portland police use on tiny demonstrations.
Right. Or the Portland police when they take their horses and just sort of try to cordon you off. And
yeah, or their bicycles that they hold in front of them and use as sort of portable gating.
Yeah.
No, I saw none of that. And I had exactly the same feeling you did when I heard the M80s go off at first. And I was just like, oh, Christ, this is why the guidebooks tell you to stay away from the demonstrations.
Died in Argentina. It'll be great.
This goes hand in baton with the fact that people fought so hard against it. And, you know, a lot of the graffiti referred to those, the Falcons, the Ford Falcons that were used to carry away disappeared.
Now,
I'm not going to forget that.
I thought I remember you talking about in neighborhoods, the plaques to the disappeared still. From the 70s.
Yes, there are mosaic plaques that are in the sidewalks of the different neighborhoods, memorializing folks that had disappeared from that area, from the neighborhood. I ran into several of these while I was walking around. And, you would have some sentiment at the top, like, you know, we will always remember the disappeared and tortured. Disappeared, tortured, and assassinated. And the names with their disappearance dates, usually, I don't know, couple dozen people on these plaques or mosaic tile, basically it was. At one point, I was standing and taking photographs of one that was actually put out by the Japanese Association. There's a large Japanese community, Korean community, and Chinese community in Buenos Aires. And so Japanese Buenos Aireans who were disappeared, you know, had this remembrance plaque. And as I'm standing there photographing it, there was a woman who was probably mid-60s who walked up and asked me if I was taking pictures of it because I thought it was beautiful. And here's where all of a sudden Ani gets a little squidgy because I don't know her. I don't know where she's coming from politically. I don't know nothing. I just know here I am. I'm kind of radical. I speak very bad Spanish. Very bad Spanish.
Was she talking to you? Did you say in English?
Oh, no. Spanish.
Spanish, okay.
That was the other eye-opening experience. I'm used to traveling, say, you know, in Britain, Canada. I'm used to traveling in Mexico. Sure. A lot of people speak English.
Yeah.
A lot of people. Speak English in England. A lot of people speak English in Canada. And actually, tons of people speak English on the west coast of Mexico, even as you get down to the central areas. Tons of people speak English in Mexico. I really didn't have a good perspective of that before. Not so English speaking in Buenos Aires. So a lot of Portuguese speaking, because that's the neighboring country, right? The U.S.? What? So she comes up, she says in Spanish, you know, and I at this point can understand Spanish fairly well, but to respond, I don't know so much, you know, and I thought, well, I'm going to try to say this carefully because I don't know where she's coming from, and I sure don't have enough Spanish to engage in a full-on political discussion, but I replied back that I thought that they were beautiful, but I thought they were also interesting and very important historically. And apparently I was understandable. And she smiled and told me that she had friends who had been disappeared and that she and her friends were a part of a remembrance group that held demonstrations very regularly and that it was very important that we never forget.
You know what struck me a little
bit? And then
we
hugged each other on the corner. And, you know, in my very broken Spanish, I told her I worked for human rights in the States, and she hugged me again. And,
so sweet.
And you know, we told each other it was so good to meet each other, I don't know, 5 or 6 times before we could actually part. But that, again, was, I think, another example of how very palpable, how very real the Argentinian history is to people. It's living memory. It's right there. And it's actually reflected all around you, so you don't get a chance to forget. In this country, atrocities happen. Atrocities happen,
I
would say, not infrequently.
Well, that's what I was going to
say. But we forget.
We have our disappeared. We have a quarter of black males who are busted hard for stuff that white guys would skate on, and they're disappeared, and we don't have solidarity with them, so we don't think of them that way.
Right.
We don't have this graffiti on the streets. We don't have a coalition movement going forward. You know, forget the Democratic Party. You know, that's not happening.
So we also have another caller, is another thing that we have. Good morning.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm so glad I've been holding for 17 minutes or so. One of my favorite shows. So I'm calling to tell you how I'm positively revolting myself whenever possible. And having lived and worked overseas a number of places, a number of years, and had perspective, for instance, 1977, being able to take part in an demonstration in Sydney, Australia, against uranium mining and the raping of Arnhem Land.
Yes.
Northern Territory, sacred to the Native people.
Absolutely.
There's nothing like traveling. Well, for myself, I've been so fortunate with my work. I've been able to work, study, live, and, you know, do all those things in other places, and there's just nothing like it. And the culture shock, coming back and just going into any one of our supermarkets. They are indeed supermarkets. They are no, I mean, yeah.
There was a movie years ago with Robin Williams where he had defected from the Soviet Union when it was still around, and he goes into a grocery store because he's staying with a black family. They go get us some coffee. So he goes in and he sees so many different coffees that he passes out just from the sheer shock of that much. Those are our choices, right? Those are the only we can choose what coffee, but certainly not what political system we have.
Yeah, we so many people here are so I'm so sad for the total ignorance most of us suffer here because thinking that we have all of these protected freedoms, thinking that nowhere else is like America. Well, certainly nowhere else is like America.
Hopefully,
it's like America, but other places have freedoms. We all have, you know, we have what we demand. We have what we take, and we are who we are. And there are people living in any country who are free.
Right, right.
There are, you know, in the most repressed place imaginable, there are people living their conscience.
Absolutely.
And I just want to call for that. I want to call for us to be living our conscience, being real with each other. And
you have to know who you are. What Michael Mead said, what do you expect when people who are voting, people who don't know who they are, vote for people who don't know who they are? That's their choice.
It's just become so totally absurd. So one of my current things this year and last year has been, let's see, it's live justice, give kindness.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, Spring, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you so much.
I totally agree. When you know, and really, I think more than anything else, that's the message I'm trying to put out there in this show is we have to live our conscience. And I'll take Lynn's friendly amendment of we have to know what our conscience says first so that we can actually live true to our visions. Because when we do that, our vision is not apathetic, right? Our vision is not alienated. That's the condition that we have been beaten down into. But when we actually, you know, realize what's in our hearts and bring those visions forward and live according to our conscience, that's when we see the really beautiful, flowering, radical social change that we so desperately need.
Indeed.
So,
yeah.
Thank you so much for
Thank
your call.
Thank you very much. We have...
see you in the street.
All right. I hope so.
Let's go
to another caller. We've got Lori on the line, I believe.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lori.
I wondered if it's been reversed. I've missed it. Earlier this summer, there was a legal decision in Eugene to militarize the campus security police.
Wow, I have heard nothing about that.
Well, isn't that charming?
Yeah, I mean, this might have been on, all I ever listened to is NPR and KBOO. So it might have been on NPR, must have been. But I thought, my God, what Eugene, what is happening to you, and are you paying attention? Because this is so scary.
Ani is asking the Lord Google about that as we speak.
Yeah, I was a college freshman when the thing happened at Portland State, where the police were down there with riot gear and helmets and big white clubs, beating heads of girls. You know, no one was armed. It was just a peaceful, maybe noisy protest in the park blocks.
So what I'm seeing here is that in mid-June, the Oregon House approved a bill that would allow public universities, not necessarily limited to Eugene, to establish their own police forces with powers, responsibilities, and training similar to any other sworn police department across the state.
Yeah, it's still true then.
Well, that was a bill that passed in mid-June, and I'm not seeing that there is anything around rescinding it. It passed rather handily.
Yeah, that's
Is it actually law? I don't know that yet.
It's not apathy. It's ignorance. It's just people's heads are...
They're filled with Dancing with Stars.
Well, also, we are disengaged, right? We don't have media that tells us what's going on. We have, we have KBOO. Okay, great. This is a very tiny voice, right?
Well, right, and NPR used to be better. You'd hear something like that, though, and you'd cling to it, thinking, will I ever hear this again?
Well, that's the thing. There's no follow. It's like there's so much going on all the time. And whereas I actually think that KBOO's news department is very good.
Oh, yeah.
There is so much going on. And remember, we're a bunch of volunteers. But there is so much going on that it is very hard to hold focus and continue to follow something. But just to give you a little indication, the state Senate approved this bill in April. It was passed by the House in June and was sent to Governor Kitzhaber's desk. It was passed by the House without any floor debate. So it was on sort of a consent agenda. It was, do we do this? Oh, yeah or no? Okay, good. Move on. Because obviously it's just a little thing, right?
Well, the last time I looked, he had 6,000 and some bills on his desk.
Yeah, exactly.
Signed, I thought, maybe he isn't insane.
Maybe he's taking some time to sign them because he wants to read them all first or something, Just a thought. Thank you very much for your call. We're nearly out of time.
Yeah, thanks for... I don't have a computer in the house anymore because after a Trojan virus, I don't...
There you go.
I'm a terrorist, according to some people.
Aren't we all? All right,
yeah.
Onwards
together.
Thank
you so much, Lori.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you want to take one more call?
We are
really
almost
fast?
Out of time, but yes, let's go ahead
really,
and grab
a really
person
fast
now.
One, Mike.
Mike, you're on the air.
The reason that progressives have not got a lot of progress is because the freedoms that they've been striving for are freedoms like expression. They want the freedom to be homosexuals, the freedom to be witches, those type of freedoms.
I'm a queer witch, and I demand my right to be so. And I also want to make sure people aren't sleeping in the streets, have right to health care, have right to education, and that we all come through and we are able to work together, queer witches, black Christians, all of us together as one, to make sure that we are supporting our kids, that we are having good health care, and that we have a good educational system.
Well, freedom of expression is not...
My ability to worship my goddess as I choose to is not freedom of expression. That's a fundamental spiritual right. Like you worship your God, I worship mine. That's it.
Thank you for your call.
All right. So we also have, just got to say,
Yeah, my life. Don't trivialize it. I want to go ahead and throw out one website for people that are interested beyond the pictures I took of what Buenos Aires looks like and the range of street art and graffiti that is involved, because I found it truly inspirational. I really did. There is a website where people collect Buenos Aires street art because it is actually accepted as part of the culture. I have to say, while I was there, I saw kids stenciling, I saw kids spray painting, I didn't see them wearing masks, and I didn't see them doing it at night. I saw the middle of the day, much bright, bright spray paint. Some of it beautiful, some of it kind of drunk and scrawly. You know, what can you do?
Because the idea is, and the culture is, that expression is very important, and they know what happens when you don't allow it.
And there were some buildings where there were some stencils, official stencils, that said, please don't paint here, this is a historic landmark. And you know, those walls didn't get sprayed. Anything else, apparently, fair game. So the website is called escritoenlacalle.com. And for folks that want that spelled out, it's escritoenlacalle.com. And I will actually go ahead and put that up on our page that you can find at kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting.
And I want to thank Alicia Olson for putting that up for us every week.
Oh, yes.
And our engineer, Mike, who we don't thank enough.
Yay, engineer Mike.
The happy engineering pixie. Thank you, Mike. Well, we are... Well, Mike, it's your day. You can be called a pixie now. So we are really at the end of time. I just wanted to maybe sum up by saying, emphasizing again, traveling is so very, very important. I can't wait to do more of it. I know that I actually broke out in tears when I realized I only had 4 days left. I really didn't want to return to this country at all, I gotta say. I started fantasizing every time I passed a coffee shop that needed a barista. I started wondering how fast my Spanish could improve and what it's like to live as an illegal in other places. I started wondering all of these things because I was in touch via Facebook with folks in this country, and it didn't look good. I mean, I came back immediately after there was the whole threat to close down the federal government because, you know, we got to, you know, get rid of every benefit to the social good we've ever had to feed the rich some more. I'm like, why did I come back? Why? I don't know. You tell me why I came back, and let's actually make some change together.
And be positively revolting.
Tristeza de arrabal, sentado en la vereda. Tristeza de arrabal, el amor que se fue por las calles desiertas. El amor que se va. Las esquinas baldías, la luna sobre el portal, rezo suena lejano, tristeza del arrabal. Tristeza de arrabal, la luz de las bombitas, al lado del canal, el amor que se fue noche infinita. El amor que no está. Las mejillas golpeadas. Lágrimas sobre el mar. Un sueño hecho pedazos. Tristeza de